Douglas loved music. He was a great guitarist, and it was, you know, used to, when he was a student, he hitchhiked around Greece playing in bars, you know. He loved rock music, but he also loved classical music. He always used to tell this story about when the NASA decided to send that time capsule off to the far reaches of the universe in order to tell any possible alien civilization what humanity had achieved to date. He said they were going to put some music in, they were going to put some Bach in, but they thought it'd be too much like showing off, because he thought Bach was, you know, perfect.
This is not a statement I make lightly. I don't think that a greater genius has walked the earth. It's funny, of the three great composers, the people that most usually get clumped together as the three great composers, Bach, Mozart and Beethoven, I feel that Mozart tells us what it's like to be human. Beethoven tells us what it's like to be Beethoven. And Bach tells us what it's like to be the universe. Now, I first discovered Bach again when I was at school through singing in the school choir. When I first encountered the keyboard music, I found it impenetrable simply because of the way that the harpsichord sounds. It demanded a huge amount of sort of intent listening before the thing suddenly opens out. Actually, the very first piece that I grew really to love was the Italian Concerto. But then after that was this piece, which is the Chromatic Fantasia and Fugue in D minor. The Fantasia is just sort of great exploding fireworks all over the place. And then the Fugue is this thing that just starts out doing a very, very, well, obviously a very, very simple single line that just mounts and mounts and mounts. And the whole thing just gets higher in terms of pitch of excitement, just goes up and up and up and up. You can't believe it's going to get more exciting yet, but it manages to. It's one of the most thrilling pieces of music I know.
But when did you first sort of get interested in classical music? I mean, does that go back a long way?
Oh, yes, a very long way. And I suppose it really started with my being in the school choir. And I learnt originally to love a great deal of church choral music. And we'll come on to that in a second. The interesting thing was there was a dichotomy in my mind for some time between that kind of music and opera, on the other hand. And for some reason, I just thought I couldn't bear opera. I couldn't stand it.
I think it is something else that you have to get into.
Yeah.
I mean, because it requires entering into another world, really, and finding a new faith.
It may also be in the fact that when at school we occasionally went up to see Wagner at the Colosseum, and I still have the bruises on my knees, because I'm 6'5", and I was then. I still have the bruises on my knees from the seat in front of me, you know, because it was just so uncomfortable. But there was something, it always seemed to me in opera, rather priggishly, I felt it seemed to be the over-aggrandizement of what seemed to be a rather trivial emotion, if you see what I mean. It was only literally about 10 years ago that I finally thought, oh, just somebody been banging on to me about opera.
I thought
there are enough intelligent people whose opinions I respect who think this is the best thing ever. I really ought to do something about it. So I went out and got a CD of The Marriage of Figaro, a Scholti recording. And I didn't want to sort of get into sort of directly, so I just sort of had it on in the background playing all weekend, so I just sort of get sort of a bit sort of warm with it, if you see what I mean. And then I think the following weekend I sort of sat down and listened to it very intently and sort of followed the libretto and so on. And it was suddenly like these enormous great doors opening up. And I thought, that's it. Good heavens, how extraordinary. And oddly enough, I was at a party a few days later where I bumped into Nick Heitner, who is now the famous film director. And
there was then a humble opera director.
That's right, yes. And I told him this story and he said, well, of course, you did start with The Marriage of Figaro and that is the best one, isn't it?
It's all downhill from now.
Douglas talking to Michael Barclay there when he was a guest on his Radio 3 programme Private Passions. His choice of music ranged widely, from Berlioz, Britten and Bach, to Gary Brooker, Randy Newman and Robbie McIntosh, all leading rock musicians. As a teenager, Douglas had two major influences in his life. Monty Python, of course, and the Beatles. He talked to Tommy Pearson on Radio 3's Music Machine about the impact the Sgt. Pepper album had on him way back in 1967.
Well, there had been nothing like it
before. I mean, it was completely out of nowhere. You mentioned Revolver earlier, and of course the last track of that is Tomorrow Never Knows, which is a sort of one of the strangest and most experimental songs that the Beatles had done. And the message was that the next album was going to be all like that. But of course, you know, the Beatles are never all like anything.
I read that when you were conceiving Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you were thinking about radio in concept album terms. Is that right?
Well, it's absolutely true. And, you know, Pepper obviously had a lot to do with that. I just felt when I was doing Hitchhiker, I wanted it to sound like Sergeant Pepper. I mean, it didn't exactly, but I mean, it's, you know, that was the kind of feel that there's, it isn't just a story or it isn't just a record. It really is a kind of oral landscape. I'm going to wish I hadn't said that, Sue, but I did.
Never mind, Douglas. You succeeded. That's all that matters. The rest, as the cliche goes, is history. M also has another meaning for us here. Literally,